Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight, Hick, a love story. Historians have debated for decades about whether one of America's most famous first ladies was a lesbian. Eleanor Roosevelt was the wife of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, president during most of the Great Depression, the New Deal, and World War II. While first lady, she became a prominent activist for women's rights and racial equality. She was the first lady to hold press conferences, and she wrote a daily newspaper column. It was during FDR's first presidential campaign in 1932 that she got to know America's most prominent female journalist at the time, Lorena Hickok, who helped shape Eleanor's public persona. Hickok even lived in the White House at various times during FDR's long presidency, and the press corps called her the first friend. Speculation about her relationship with Eleanor was largely under the surface until the Lorena Hickok biography was published in 1980. It included many of Eleanor's letters to Hick, confirming the existence of a deep and passionate relationship between them. Most book reviewers at the time considered it proof that Eleanor Roosevelt had had a lesbian relationship. Now, a world premiere play sheds new light on the subject. Hick, a Love Story, the romance of Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt, runs through July 27th at the Eureka Theater in San Francisco. All performances are free, and you'll hear a scene or two from it in the next half hour. Hick, a Love Story, is written and performed by Terry Baum and directed by Carolyn Myers, my guests tonight on Out in the Bay. Baum and Myers have been creating theater together for over 40 years. Since 2008, they have performed around the country, but especially in the Bay Area, as the Crackpot Crones, doing sketch comedy and improvisation with a feminist and lesbian slant. Their last outing was Crones for the Holidays, the sequel, at the Exit Theater in San Francisco last December. Terry Baum and Carolyn Myers, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
My pleasure. So, first of all, why is this play being presented for free?
Well, we feel that it's such an incredible story. It's a really important part of gay history that Eleanor Roosevelt, in fact, had a lesbian relationship, and also that one of the main people who nurtured her and helped her become the amazing activist that she was a dyke who was in love with her.
And why is it so important for people to hear that, to know that now?
Well, I think that it's not only this story, though this particular story of Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt is amazing in so many ways, but it's also a story that's significant in terms of all the lesbian and gay lives that have been covered up and that we don't hear about. And here was Hick, and she really has been written out for a long time and now rediscovered. And mm-hmm. so right. we're part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
That's interesting. Just last month I interviewed the Kika Women's Ensemble from Oakland, who did a piece
right.
about Sophia Parnok, the censored lesbian poet from 19-teens in Russia.
I was at the concert last night.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, so what inspired you to write and produce Hick, a Love Story?
Well, my friend Pat Bond wrote the first play about Hick, which she performed in 1984 in San Francisco and all over the country. And that at that point, the only information about Hick was this first biography. Hick had donated all her letters to the FDR Library in Hyde Park, but with the stipulation that they had to wait for 10 years after her death to be opened and looked at. So it wasn't until 1978 that a researcher came in and could actually read these, go through these papers and see all these amazing letters from Eleanor Roosevelt. There's 2,336 letters. So from Eleanor to Hick. 2,336, and Hick burned a lot of letters. So,
yeah, now, Dad, these were saved because everything she wrote as First Lady had to be preserved by some sort of...
No.
She just chose to save them.
No, Hick saved them herself.
Hick saved them. Oh, the letters that Eleanor had sent to her.
Yes, and wow. Hick had been saving them since the very first letter she got from Eleanor. But later in her life, when she thought about turning them over, she thought, people are going to know. And so she went through in the first 6 months of those letters, she edited them and typed up new versions that didn't have all the love stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But she also saved, she couldn't bring herself to burn a lot of them. So
sure.
We have a few of those, but not all we would wish.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyhow, Pat Bond did this show and traveled all around the country doing it in the early 80s. And then we decided to do as the Crackpot Crones, we decided to do a scene from one of her plays. So Carolyn actually went to the Hormel Gay and Lesbian Center in the library and got Pat's scripts. And we read through, and we found in Hick, her play about Hick, this wonderful imagining of the courtship, which of course isn't recorded anywhere, but Pat had invented it. So in one of our shows, which was a combination of sketch comedy and improvisation, I did this 12-minute scene, and it was such a hit with the audience. People wanted more. They just wanted more, and I felt this connection with Hick. I felt I was channeling something, that there was somebody speaking through me, which is a wonderful feeling as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you look perfect with the typewriter on the postcard.
Yeah, right.
And then we were fortunate enough to work with Joe Landini at the Garage under the auspices.
National Queer Arts Festival.
Yeah. He has an organization within his theater for developing new works. So we were one of the participants in that, and we did the show as a one act last year.
Okay, fantastic.
Now you've a workshop production.
You've prepared a couple of scenes for us to for Out in the Bay listeners to hear. What do you want to start with?
I think let's start with the letters,
okay?
Because really, the reason that we know that they had a lesbian love relationship is because of Eleanor's letters. And I think there's a lot of Eleanor's letters in the show. And we really, we feel that the sum total of them, when you listen to them, convinces you that these two women were in love and that they had sex. They had a physical relationship. And I had to get the permission of the FDR estate, the FDR family, to use the letters verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
Because the letters are not in the public domain. Eleanor's letters are not in the public domain.
So how were they? Were they cooperative?
Well, I asked them, and they asked me, what was my opinion of their relationship? And I said they were in love. And eventually Eleanor fell out of love. Hick never did. And they were very close friends for all of Eleanor's life. And they gave me permission. So it seems to me that even the FDR family is really acknowledging, embracing.
Yeah, so kind of like the Liberace Museum. Finally, they decided, okay, yeah, you're right. He was gay. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think there's a difference in Eleanor Roosevelt's impact on the world and Liberace's
probably
impact.
So.
Just
probably
a little
so.
Bad.
No, but I'm just saying how the official position softened a little, shall we say,
yes,
over the years.
Right, yeah. So anyhow, Carolyn is going to be reading the part of Eleanor. Paula Barish, wonderful actress, will be reading them on tape for us. And these are the very, very first letters that Eleanor sent. It's right after the inauguration.
Okay, and they've met some months before during the campaign, the 1932 presidential campaign,
that's right?
Can you tell us briefly how they happened to meet?
Well, Hick, it's interesting because actually Hick had a vision of Eleanor as a public figure before anybody else. She convinced the Associated Press to assign a woman reporter to follow the wife of the presidential candidate. That was an unprecedented level of attention. I mean, the wives of candidates had really only been hostesses, and help meets. But Hick had the feeling from not a lot of contact with Eleanor that she was very special. So, in fact, that really started the ball rolling, and Hick ended up being assigned to cover Eleanor.
And so Hick also convinced the AP to let her stay, that stay as her assignment through the inauguration. So then she had to go back to New York and be a AP reporter again. So these letters are Eleanor's first days in the White House in Washington, D.C., writing to Hick, who's in New York City.
Yeah. So the whole time until the inauguration, Hick was, her assignment was, as she said, it's my job to follow around the great love of my life. So, but that ended. So now the letters are starting.
Okay.
The White House, March 5th, 1933. Hick, my dearest, I cannot go to bed tonight without a word to you. I felt a little as though a part of me was leaving when you left. You have grown to be so much a part of my life that it is empty without you, even though I am busy every minute. All my love, and I shall be saying to you over thought waves in a few minutes. Good night, my dear one. Angels guard thee. God protect thee. My love enfold thee all the night through. Always yours, E.R.
Oh, I am the luckiest gal in the world.
March 6th. My pictures are nearly all up, and I have you in my sitting room. I can't kiss you in person, so I kiss your picture good night and good morning. Don't laugh.
And I kiss your letter. March 7th.
My dear, when we meet, may I forget there are other reporters present, or must I behave? I shall want to hug you to death.
Oh, you must behave. March 8th.
Oh, I want to put my arms around you. I ache to hold you close. Your ring is a great comfort. I look at it and think she does love me, or I wouldn't be wearing it.
She wore that ring to the inauguration. It's her first week in the White House, and Eleanor is writing me every day. She calls me, too. One night we talked for hours, and right after we hung up, she wrote me a letter.
Hick, darling, oh, how good it was to hear your voice tonight. Words are so inadequate to tell you what it meant. My son Jimmy was near, and I couldn't say je t'aime and je t'adore as I longed to do. But always remember, I am saying it. I go to sleep thinking of you and repeating our little saying, je t'aime and je t'adore. No one is like you, Hick. I love you, and good night, E.R.
I knew that je t'aime meant I love you in French, but je t'adore? It sounded like shut the door to me. So the first time Eleanor said je t'aime et je t'adore, I thought she was saying I love you and shut the door. Well, her word was my command, so I shut the damn door. Oh, didn't we laugh about that? She can always cheer me up when I'm down by whispering tenderly in my ear, Hick, darling, shut the door.
That is Terry Byam and Carolyn Myers reading from Hick, A Love Story, the romance of Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt. It's continuing through July 27th at the Eureka Theater on Jackson Street in San Francisco, and all performances are free. And you can get information about it at crackpotcrones.com.
Yes, we're on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. And for those who don't want to go out at night, also Sunday matinee.
Okay, fantastic.
And now, we're free.
Now, but you can't just show up there. You have to make reservations.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So don't just expect to just show up and go in for free. So go to crackpotcrones.com, get reservations. You can also see a trailer there, you said?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, a great little trailer.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we spoke on the phone recently, Terry, you told me that Eleanor Roosevelt dreaded being First Lady.
Yes.
Yet she certainly got into it in a big, big way. She had lots of things on her agenda. But can you, first of all, name some of her major accomplishments, and how did Lorena Hickok help her with that?
Well, I would say that Eleanor Roosevelt's greatest accomplishment came after she was First Lady, when she was appointed to the UN by Truman, and she is absolutely the person who made the Universal Declaration of Human Rights happen. It's simply because she had such incredible stature. I think Truman called her First Lady of the World, and she was looked at that way, that she was able to get this amazing, radical document. I mean, it goes far beyond what we have in the United States in terms of human rights. There's a right to leisure, you know. There's a right to education. And to get it through the UN and get it passed by the General Assembly, I would say, at that point, Hick wasn't a big part of her life. Hick was really the person that got her started as a public persona by covering her and publishing stories about her. That was Hick's idea to do that. And then it was her idea that Eleanor hold press conferences every week.
Now, kind of when you were saying this before that you started the reading of that section of the play, I wondered if, you know, did Lorena have a little crush on her beforehand, before she even met her? Did she engineer this thing where, hey, I want to cover the First Lady starting with the campaign?
I don't know if she certainly had a feeling of her as a special person. Don't you think so, Carolyn?
Yeah.
Because there's a telegram where she says, this Roosevelt dame has enormous dignity. She's a person.
Yeah. Okay. So,
but the real falling in love happened during the campaign. Mm-hmm. But by the time she's in the White House, they've already become lovers and have a solid relationship.
Yeah.
So, you know, how did that? What were the housing arrangements like in the White House?
what they got away with in general is astonishing. Like, after the inauguration, they took a vacation for 3 weeks, just Eleanor and Hick, and the Secret Service was like, "You can't do this," and they just did it. They just went off
without
Can
the
you
Secret
imagine
Service or anything.
In this
yeah.
Day
yeah.
Age?
Yeah. No.
And in the White House, they. Hick lived there at several different times. At this point, early on, she had a little, she slept in a closet, basically, in Eleanor's bedroom, sort of a large closet right off the room.
That's just crazy.
Now, so to speak. And then during the war, she had her own room on the second floor. FDR gathered a lot of people around him. A lot of people lived in the White House. But she was there. She wasn't part of that particular group.
No.
But her room was right across from Eleanor's.
She was the only person living in the White House. There was a lot of people living in the White House during World War II, but everyone was either a relative or working for the president, except for Hick. And Hick was there. At this point, she and Eleanor were not lovers anymore, but they were very close friends, and Eleanor wanted her to be there so that they could have breakfast together
and
talk and
chat
at night.
And whatever.
Yeah.
So she never was an official advisor or anything
no,
like that?
Never.
Okay,
no.
But she was just allowed to live there because she was the first friend, as the press
called her. She
started
out as a journalist, and as you say, she was the foremost woman journalist, but she had to give that up because she was too close.
Right.
All they wanted her to write about was the inside scoop on Eleanor and Franklin, and she couldn't do
it
that.
It was impossible.
So she did a lot of other really interesting work in her life, but she never found anything that was like being an AP reporter.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So she really, that's another important thing that I think people should know. I believe firmly that Eleanor Roosevelt is the greatest woman of the 20th, greatest American woman of the 20th century. The more you read about her, the more amazing she is. She was so incredibly outspoken and worked so hard for so many causes. In terms of civil rights, she was very, very early at the table and going to conferences down south where she went to one conference in the South where the white people and the black people had to sit on opposite sides of the aisle. And then Eleanor came in and she put her chair in the middle of the aisle so that she wasn't sitting on the, you know, and so that she wasn't sitting on the white side, you know, she was staking her claim for everybody to belong together. I mean, this is a long time ago. This is like, you know, in the 30s she's doing.
And she did something
like
about the opera singer, Marian Anderson.
That's
right.
Right.
Tell us
yes.
that story. If
That's
you know
right.
the details.
Yeah, the Daughters of the American Revolution had denied Marian Anderson the hall she was supposed to perform in. And so Eleanor arranged in like 9 days for her to perform on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And, of course, it's one of the greatest moments in American history. And right. many, many, many people showed up. And she also is the person who got FDR to create and sign the anti-discrimination and hiring that we still use today. You know, you can't not be hired because of race or gender or nationality or those things. That was her, too.
So, yeah, and Hick really did sacrifice her own destiny to be part of Eleanor's destiny. She was always there for Eleanor. And some of the writers about her seemed to feel that Eleanor just kept in contact with her because she felt sorry for her. But I really believe that it was way, way too much contact mm-hmm. for just pity, that there was a very deep soul connection between the two of them that lasted all of Eleanor's life, and that it was something that nourished her, uh-huh. you know, that she really needed to know that she could always return and Hick would be there and they could sit and talk. So
how long did their love relationship or their sexual relationship last roughly? Do you have an idea?
It's not clear, really. Some people say 6 years, 4 years, something like that.
And as far as you know, Eleanor Roosevelt did not have other lesbian relationships after that, or do we even know that?
We don't know that she did. No, there isn't any talk about anybody else. She had a male bodyguard that there was a lot of gossip about. Mm-hmm. And his letters have all completely disappeared. Mm-hmm. So we will just simply never know what happened between Eleanor and her bodyguard. She was a very adventurous woman.
So before we run out of time, I want to ask, you said you have another scene, perhaps something about the interview in the office?
Right, this scene.
Bathroom, rather.
Right, and this story we came upon late in creation of the play. Lillian Parks, who was a White House maid, wrote a couple of books that had sort of a tell-all character, and this is a story from that book. So it really happened.
Well, Hick also talks about, I knew about the interview in the bathroom, but I never really thought about it in the way that it really must have happened, because why do two people go into a bathroom and lock the door? There isn't really any reason.
So this scene takes place in the White House right after the inauguration.
So this is a historical event for first ladies and for journalists, because a first lady's never been interviewed in the White House. So this is the first time that this is happening. And it's of course been the culmination of an incredibly intense, demanding time. So this is Hick. She was up very late hearing FDR's inaugural address when it was first read to her by Eleanor, and now she's come in the morning to the White House to do this interview. I somehow got up the energy to do that interview. The White House was a madhouse of people running around, moving things, setting things up. We sat there in the middle of it all, pretending that I was a reporter and she was a first lady. We were both vibrating with exhaustion and energy. All we wanted was to touch each other. Suddenly, Eleanor announced very loudly that everyone was interrupting this very important interview when we needed quiet and privacy. We were going to be forced, she said, to move the interview into one of the bathrooms and lock the door. So please don't anyone bother us. Madam, what are you doing? Where are you going? We can't just... This is crazy. No. Hick disappears off stage, then re-enters. We were very naughty. But, well, we just needed each other right then. Oh, my goodness, we had a damn good time. It was a crazy thing to do. Everyone saw us go in there. But they're all acting as if first ladies are interviewed in locked bathrooms every day of the year. All of them except for one of the White House maids, who gives me a knowing smile and a wink. I just wink back. And then on to the AP office to write my last story on Anna Eleanor Roosevelt, a woman possessed of many talents and the most magnificent blue eyes.
That's beautiful. That's Terry Baum reading from Hick, A Love Story. She's my guest here on Out in the Bay, along with Carolyn Myers, the director and co-collaborator in Crackpot Crones.
Yes.
Over the years. This play is being performed for free at the Eureka Theater, but you do have to make reservations. Go to the Crackpot, not the Crackpot Crones, just crackpotcrones.com for more information and tickets. Tell us a little bit about the research process.
Well, there's a lot of books now that you can read. This little information we found about the maid observing the bathroom shenanigans, that was Carolyn found that in the biography of Eleanor Roosevelt, right?
Right.
The most recent biography of Eleanor Roosevelt. I went to the FDR Library in Hyde Park for a week to look at all of Lorena Hickok's papers. And that was a very exciting thing to do. And I learned certain things shifted in my understanding of Hick. One of them was something that I said before, that in fact, this was a very deep, profound relationship for both of them to the end of Eleanor's life. And another thing was that Hick, when she wrote about herself, once she was out of journalism, when she had other jobs, she'd say, oh, I couldn't do the job and people didn't like me. And she seemed to be a person totally out of step with the rest of the world in terms of how you she presented herself. But in looking at the papers, I saw that people loved her and that, in fact, she had this amazing charisma. And many, many people loved Lorena Hickok, not just Eleanor Roosevelt.
I want to thank you both so much for being here. I can't wait to see the show, and I recommend you go out and see it, too. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We're heard Thursdays at 7 p.m. Pacific time on KALW.org worldwide and at 91.7 FM in the Bay Area, and anytime you want to on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can find a year's worth of archives, a best-of page with dozens of our favorites, sign up for weekly free podcasts, and take us with you on your mobile device by signing up for Stitcher. That's right, Stitcher, the application that lets you download radio programs. It's all free, and it's all on our website, outinthebay.org. We bring you conversations you aren't likely to hear elsewhere because we're able to have on guests that most mainstream programs can't or just don't. We love Terry Gross, but we don't think she's invited the Crackpot Crones on. Has she, Terry or
not,
Carolyn?
Not
yet?
Oh, okay. She's begging to have us, but we wanted to come here instead.
Well, we hope that's of value to you and that you'll help keep Out in the Bay going strong for another 9.5 years. That's right. We're coming up on 10 years in October. Please consider a tax-deductible contribution at our website, outinthebay.com. Again, to get information about the play, go to crackpotcrones.com. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime. If your business or nonprofit would like to help support Out in the Bay and receive on-air thanks heard by our thousands of listeners weekly, please see the sponsors page on our website, outinthebay.com. We'd love to hear from you, so write to us, Marilyn at outinthebay.com and Eric at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.